listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, public health nursing.
Hi, and good morning. This is Wellness Wednesday on KYUK Radio. I am Donna Bean. I'm a public health nurse over at the Bethel Public Health Center. Today's show is going to cover sexual health, primarily some infections that we as general global citizens, but also as Alaskans, should know a little bit more about because they affect us here at home. We've got a few that we as the state of Alaska have led the nation in rates on, so it's really important to get this information out to folks. So to that end, I've got two guests with me here today. They're very knowledgeable on sexually transmitted infections. And so Claire Lewis and Lisa Ray are on the line. I want to thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here with us today. I'm sure our listeners are going to learn a lot of important and relevant information from you both. So if you could each introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit more about what you do, we'd love to hear it.
My name is Lisa Ray, and I'm a nurse. I work at Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium in Anchorage, and I work as an HIV nurse case manager. I also work with the I Want the Kit testing, which is at-home testing for chlamydia and gonorrhea. And I have worked many years in sexually transmitted infections and HIV. And I enjoy talking with people and educating them about these important things.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for having us. This is Claire Lewis. I am a women's health nurse practitioner, and I see women for their women's health care, but I also get in touch with clients of the YK Delta if they have a type of sexually transmitted infection that needs treatment. Thank you again for having us.
So are you both, you're both from Alaska or not?
I grew up in Alaska. Okay. And I went to nursing school here at UAA.
Oh, awesome.
And I am born and raised in St. Louis and came up a long time ago as a traveling nurse and met my now then husband. So Alaska is my home and has been for 20 plus years. And I've been with YKHC since 2002.
Oh, wonderful. And you both have, I've seen you out here. So you both have been out to the Delta and you're aware of what Bethel is like.
Awesome.
Yes, we're lucky we get to come out several times a year.
Yeah, that's great. So thank you both again. And I'm glad to hear that you are with us because you've got so much knowledge on STIs or sexually transmitted infections. So the topics we have to talk about today in our time is going to be HIV/AIDS, syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea. So these are all important diseases to know about in general for our sexual health, but Alaska, especially Alaskans, should be informed on these. We're currently experiencing a syphilis outbreak in the Anchorage area, and our rates for chlamydia and gonorrhea infections are consistently in the top three for the entire nation. So all 50 states, Alaska's neither number one for chlamydia or number three, same with gonorrhea. We're really wanting to do some prevention work and education today on these infections. So any listeners, I encourage you to call in with any questions you might have. The numbers to call are 543-5985 or 1-800-995-8954. So December 1st was World AIDS Day. So let's get started with talking about HIV infection. HIV is human immunodeficiency virus. Claire, what is HIV/AIDS? Because they're not the same thing. And how is the virus transmitted?
Hi, Donna. HIV, as you just said, human immunodeficiency virus, is a virus, whereas AIDS, which stands for Acquired Immunodeficiency Syndrome, is a condition that can happen. And you have to have HIV in order for it can develop into AIDS, if you will. So it's always diagnosed as far as AIDS by certain laboratory tests or physical presentations or symptoms. So, but the bottom line is no one is going to know if they have HIV unless they get testing.
Okay.
And HIV is transmitted through body fluids and behaviors where those body fluids are exchanged. And so HIV can be present in vaginal fluids, semen, so that can be transmitted through sexual practices. It's also transmitted through injection drug use, so that's sharing blood. It can be transmitted from mother to baby. It can be transmitted through breastfeeding.
Okay.
So we know the large percentage of HIV is transmitted through sexual contact, whether that is oral sex, whether it's anal sex, or whether it's vaginal sex. It does not matter the route, but it still can be transmitted because it is a skin-to-skin mucous membrane type of transmission. And typically there might be a very, very small microscopic, meaning we can't see it, a cut that allows the infection to be introduced to a person's body, typically through sexual transmission.
And some sexual behaviors are riskier than others for transmitting if there's more likely to have some sort of trauma or a little bit of tearing, like Claire was talking about. So any behavior that has the body fluid present and can potentially introduce blood if it were to contain the HIV virus is how it would be transmitted.
And we've known about HIV since the 80s, and a long time ago, it typically was thought to be more of a infection that happened when men have sex with men, but we also know it happens when women have sex with men, so that is definitely more on the rise, but yes, it can happen any route of sexual contact, no matter who the sex is between.
Okay, you're saying that prevention and screening is the best way to find out to deal with HIV. So how can we be tested to find out if we have HIV here in Alaska? And what are the best ways to prevent spreading HIV?
Testing can usually be done with a simple blood test, and that can be done in a clinic, in a village clinic. It can be done in a hub site. It can be done here in Anchorage. They can ask providers to be tested. It's a simple blood test for testing for HIV. Depending on where someone gets tested, may determine how long it takes for them to get their test results back, but it's usually a short period of time. As far as to prevent the spread of infection, people really knowing whether that they're infected is a huge way to prevent it, because if someone knows they're infected, they're less likely to transmit it to other people. And people that are infected and on medications to control their HIV have a very low risk of transmitting HIV to others if their HIV virus is controlled and to what we considered undetectable levels. It's recently become known that if someone is HIV positive and their HIV virus is undetectable over a period of time and they consistently take their medications, they really have no risk of transmitting it to other people. So it's really important that we get people tested so they know their status, and if they are infected, that they can take HIV medications to control it so that they don't spread it to other people.
And Donna, I'd like to add to that, that if any person is traveling to Bethel or they're traveling to the Anchorage area, and we'll talk about that later, there is a walk-in clinic on the ANTHC, ANMC campus. And I think if a person is coming in for a knee exam because they fell and hurt their knee or something, and then they just tell the provider, oh, by the way, can you look and see if I've been tested recently for any sexually transmitted infection? I know I'm here for my knee, but I'd really like to get my blood drawn, and I also would like to be tested for sexually transmitted infection. So take advantage, whether you are at the hospital in Bethel or if you're in one of your rural community village health aid clinic settings or if you're traveling to Anchorage.
So, Claire, what you're saying is folks have to ask to be tested. It's not part of regular screenings or regular, if you go in for an STI check, it's not part of the regular testing that's done when they draw blood?
Well, in answer to your question, if someone specifically is going to be seen for a sexually transmitted infection test, they should be tested for chlamydia and gonorrhea, as well as HIV and syphilis. But what I'm saying is, if there's an opportunity that you're physically in a place that they offer testing, whether it's a village clinic or at the YK hospital, and you're there for a totally unrelated type of visit, ask the provider, hey, can you look and see if I've been tested recently? And just ask to be tested when you're there. And that can be done with a urine sample or a vaginal swab for a woman. And we will also talk about how we can test any site that sexual activity has taken place, which would be an oral test as well as a self-anal swab test.
And we would like it to be part of routine care. And sometimes it is, like in prenatal care, typically if regular care, it is routine. But a lot of people don't access routine annual care. So it is important, like Claire said, if they have the opportunity, they're seeing a healthcare provider and they're at risk or they're not sure if they've been tested, that they ask for it. Just getting your blood drawn does not mean that you're being tested for HIV. Just getting a pap smear does not mean you're being tested for chlamydia and gonorrhea. So talk with the provider and the people that you're seeing about what exactly you are being tested for and when you were last tested.
Are there any symptoms that someone with an HIV infection might need to look out for?
When someone is newly infected, they may have flu-like symptoms. They may feel, they may have a sore throat. They may have nausea, diarrhea, upset stomach. They may feel sore and achy all over. It may be mistaken for the flu or for strep throat. And we have seen that where we've looked back when people have kind of missed opportunities for being tested. Someone's accessed an urgent care or something and gone in for those kinds of symptoms and haven't been tested for HIV but have had repeated tests for strep throat and those come back negative. And then, you know, whenever later they end up getting tested for HIV, and we can go back and think, well, that was probably their acute phase of HIV, and that's when the virus had entered their body and really started to replicate, and that's why they kind of felt sick. Some people don't have any of those symptoms when they're newly infected. Usually that will go away, and people will feel pretty okay and fine, even for years and years and years. And that's when their immune system starts to be attacked by the HIV virus. And that's when they start to get sick, and that's when they start to develop AIDS, the acquired immunodeficiency syndrome that Claire mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and if not everyone with a fever and not everyone that has weight loss and not everyone that has swollen neck glands or swollen lymph nodes in their genital area, in the groin area, means that you have HIV. But those would sometimes be questions that maybe a provider would ask. But it doesn't mean someone has HIV. But again, it goes back to if there's an opportunity to get testing, please do get testing. It doesn't mean monthly testing. You want to at least get tested every year. If you are sexually active and you participate in sex without a condom, which we hope that after today's visit, more and more people are going to use condoms. But we know it's not a perfect world and things happen. So
sort of to summarize what we've been saying about HIV is that it's a virus. It's the human immunodeficiency virus. It can cause AIDS. You can't really tell if you've been infected or if someone has HIV. So if you're having unprotected sex, you should get regularly tested. Even if you're at the hospital for something that has nothing to do with sex, like maybe diabetes, or you're there for your knee, ask your doctor to see when the last time you were tested was. Because sometimes you don't have any symptoms and you don't know and you feel fine and you're like, well, everything looks good down there. There's no burning. There's nothing. But sometimes it can either be no symptoms or feel like the flu. And then you can be spreading it without knowing and then eventually get sick.
Yes.
Okay. So both of you work with HIV patients here in Alaska. Lisa, you mentioned you're an HIV case manager?
Yes.
Yes. So with ANTHC. So if someone is infected, they find out that they have HIV, what does treatment look like for people in Alaska? And how can people in rural communities such as Bethel and other parts of Alaska that aren't on the road system, how can they access services if they find out that they have HIV?
It's challenging, just like other healthcare in rural parts of Alaska, but it is doable. Usually if someone's newly diagnosed, the provider refers them to us, and we will reach out to that patient and either see them here in Anchorage or see them in their hub community, like in, if they were in the YK area, see them in Bethel. There's certain lab tests that need to be done that usually requires a visit either into Anchorage or into Bethel, just because the timing and the collection of those labs, so that we can kind of so we can assess where the patient's at and what they need and what medications may be best for them. So, you know, usually initially it does require an in-person visit. Access to medications, depending on where they are in Alaska, the tribal health, most of the tribal health entities do cover HIV medications. Medicaid covers HIV medications. Insurance covers HIV medications. There's no, if someone is infected, there's no reason they shouldn't be on medications, because even if they don't have insurance or they don't have Medicaid or the place, the area in Alaska where they live, where they're, the tribal entities don't cover HIV meds, there is something called the AIDS Drug Assistance Program that's run through the state and one of the local AIDS Assistance Associations that helps pay for medications. So if someone's infected and wants to be on medications, which we recommend anybody who's infected take medications, there's no they can access them. Finances should not be a barrier. Money should not be a barrier to them getting those medications.
So can
pharmacists?
Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
So treatment is available, and it's a it's a daily medication that they take.
Usually now patients can take one pill once a day. Sometimes
okay.
People will have to take one or two pills. Or three, but most patients can take one pill once a day, which is a big change from years ago when people were taking multiple pills multiple times a day, some with food, some without food, some, you know, stored in the fridge, some not. Real complicated regimens. It has really been simplified. Side effects are slim to none. It's really gotten a lot easier. It's much more easily managed.
And can they get these medications and treatment here at YKHC as well?
Yes, they can. The pharmacy there carries the HIV medications, and patients can pick them up at the pharmacy there. They're also mailed out to patients in the rural areas. Well, and we work with patients to make sure that that's happening. Once someone starts medications for HIV, we want them to continue to take them and to take them regularly, so that they don't develop resistance to those medications that they're taking.
Okay.
So we work closely with them to educate them about the medications, any potential side effects, also other medications that they may be taking that could interact. We want to troubleshoot all those things with patients.
Okay.
And you know, really, once someone is diagnosed on medications, taking them regularly, they, you know, oftentimes we can see them once or twice a year. After, you know, usually we see them every few months when they're initially diagnosed for a year or two. But if they do well, they're otherwise healthy, no other chronic health problems, it really can be managed pretty easily. We also do sometimes see people over video visits, the VTC, and can see them, if they wish, from their rural communities, and do a follow-up visit that way as well.
Okay, that's awesome. I'm glad to hear that we have services that people can access regardless of where they are in Alaska, and support. And that it's coming from Anchorage, it's coming from Bethel. So there are different folks that people can go see and ask questions of and receive medications from.
Yes.
So a little bit earlier, I think Claire mentioned when we have HIV infection or anything dealing with sexually transmitted infections, she mentioned microscopic lesions, which basically we have these in our mouth when we brush our teeth. You know, sometimes we can tear our gum and we have no idea. Or when you're flossing and bleeding, you don't see like an open wound, but there's a tiny cut that you produce with the floss. So that also can happen with vaginal tissue, with rectal tissue. When you're having sex, there can be little micro tears that we don't see. And these tears give the virus a portal of entry, is what we always read about in medical literature. But basically, it's an opening through your skin. Your skin is a barrier. And so things like HIV, a virus or a bacteria, can get into your skin through this little hole. So we call them risk factors. Something a risk factor for HIV and for all sexually transmitted infections is having an infection. So something like syphilis, which we're going to talk about, produces like lesions or sores, chlamydia and gonorrhea. When you're infected with something, your immune system's also not as strong as it normally is because it's fighting an infection. So it's also more easily infected. There's a lot going on. So I guess I just wanted you guys to maybe touch on how when you have one infection, you're more susceptible to getting infected with something else. If you guys
and
could explain that.
I think you already stated it very clearly, Donna, that if you have one sexually transmitted infection, you are at risk of having any sexually transmitted infection. So it does increase your risk. And I think another thing to think about is that the HIV actually can take up to 8 to 12 weeks to exhibit itself in your bloodstream. So if you get testing within a few weeks or a month after you had sex without a condom and your test result is negative, that's awesome. But you should use the technology of your phone. If you do have a cell phone that says, you know, and gives you an alert saying, please get testing again in 3 months after that episode, because, again, you want to get testing to find out as soon as possible if you have the infection so that you can begin care for HIV. Having HIV, and we will talk about that later, there is a lot of stigma with HIV, but it is not like it was in the 80s when it was almost like a death sentence. A person can have a normal lifestyle, a normal life, and live as healthy as someone the same age as them for the most part, even if they have HIV virus.
Smoking will take more years off someone's life, smoking tobacco,
yes,
than HIV will if they're diagnosed.
Oh, wow.
Someone's diagnosed early with HIV and takes HIV medication,
yes,
and takes care of themselves smoking, yes.
Awesome. So it's like a chronic disease now.
It's like totally a chronic disease,
yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Except you get it typically through sex. That's why the stigma is there, because it's not like a chronic disease of diabetes, a chronic disease of high blood pressure, high cholesterol, that, okay, you take your medicine and you keep all that at bay, whereas this, people are embarrassed because they got the infection typically through sex. And that's a shame that we still have that stigma in today's society, but we still do.
And the other risk factor, too, that we haven't mentioned too much, is injection drug use.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that's becoming an increasing problem all over Alaska with meth and heroin. And so I just want to mention that as well, that, if people are using needles, making sure that they're accessing clean needles, able to access clean needles, and just that they are at risk for HIV and other infections through injection drug use.
So anytime you're having sex and anytime you're using a needle to inject something into your body or get someone else's blood near you, you're going to want to be screened for these types of infections.
Yes.
Okay. So one of these infections that we're going to talk about next is syphilis. The state of Alaska, our section of epidemiology, released some information this year that there's a current syphilis outbreak in Anchorage. What is an outbreak?
An outbreak is that either a lot of people have gotten tested and we have positive test results for a certain infection.
Mm-hmm.
So we know about the infection, and an outbreak means that there's higher numbers than what maybe were reported at a previous time when they gathered data and stuff. So, yes, we are having an outbreak of syphilis and gonorrhea in the state of Alaska, more specific here in Anchorage, and that's what that means.
So we're just seeing higher numbers than usual.
Yeah.
So and the report said that almost 50% of the syphilis cases also have another infection. So HIV, gonorrhea, or chlamydia. So it's really important to get screened.
Right, and it is very common for the infections to travel together. They're transmitted the same way. So if someone's at risk for one infection, they really are at risk for all the others.
So what exactly is syphilis? And what are some of the symptoms of syphilis that folks should be aware of in order to prevent spreading it?
Syphilis is a bacterial infection. It's transmitted through sex. It usually results in a painless sore somewhere where the contact occurred. People are often unaware of the painless sores because they can be, inside the vagina, around the vaginal opening, around the rectum, on the penis. They don't hurt usually unless they've got a secondary infection. Usually those sores will go away on their own, and so people may be very relieved by that, but that does not mean that the syphilis infection has gone away. And when someone has a painless sore that's caused by syphilis, we call that primary syphilis. It will then move, the bacteria will then move into their bloodstream, and they may not have any symptoms for a while. They may develop a rash. Syphilis has been called the great imitator because it imitates other health problems. The rash will eventually go away, and it moves into what's tertiary syphilis, where that's years later, where it can affect any organ and really any part of their body at all. So it's really important that people do get treated early on for syphilis so that they don't develop problems.
And I think building
eye problems, vision problems from syphilis. If it's left untreated, syphilis also can be transmitted between a woman to her baby if she's has syphilis and is pregnant or is infected with syphilis while she's pregnant. It can be devastating to a pregnancy.
Is this only if you give birth naturally, or is this while the baby's in utero?
This is while the baby's developing. The syphilis can affect development in utero is a very important question and can cause lots of congenital problems or babies even to be born stillborn.
And a person is diagnosed with syphilis by a blood test. And yes, there's three different stages to syphilis. And to keep the conversation just more simple, you need to be tested in order to find out if you have syphilis. And then that would be up to your healthcare provider to decide based on the history that they get and when they ask a whole lot of sexual-related questions or history of you. You may or may not remember that you may have had a open sore as what we call a chancre that, Lisa was describing. And, the typical stage one is going to happen anywhere from 3 days up to 3 months, and that's give or take. These aren't definite numbers. And then you have stage two that might be anywhere from 4 to 10 weeks after the initial infection was introduced, and then stage three, or latent syphilis, if you will, there's different stages of that, can be 3 to 15 years after an infection. So the bottom line is you still want to get testing, and you get testing with blood at the same time that you would be tested for HIV.
Okay. So anyone who's been listening right now, we've been discussing HIV and syphilis. These are really great topics, very exciting. But basically, we're wanting to touch on sexual health. And so we're discussing sexually transmitted infections that specifically are affecting Alaskans in higher numbers than in other areas of the country. So the numbers to call into are 543-5985. And 1-800-995-8954. We've got Claire from YKHC and Lisa from ANTHC here to have this conversation with us, excuse me, on how we can keep ourselves and our partners healthy and potentially our children. So we talked about syphilis being a bacteria that you need to have a blood test for. You can't just tell on your own that you have syphilis. Maybe sometimes you can see a chancre or a lesion, a sort of wound on your genitalia that you might think is suspicious. Go get it checked out. Get a test. Talk to a provider. Same with HIV. You can't tell if someone else has it or if you have it. You need to get tested. So both of those are blood tests, and you can get them done at YK, any provider in Anchorage. You can get it done at the Bethel Public Health Center. And so all of these infections are transmitted sexually. So there are two people involved. So if one person finds out that they are infected or have this infection, a virus or a bacteria, we have something here in Alaska that we call expedited partner therapy, or EPT, so that we can help keep our communities and our partners healthy. So if you've got, if your partner tells you they think they have an infection, you can go to a provider and talk to them about this. So Claire, could you explain this sort of treatment that we have for partners and how it helps protect the sexual health of folks who have tested positive?
Yes. EPT or expedited partner therapy has been available for years and years, and the risk of someone having a reaction to the antibiotic is so low that they felt like to get a person treated for a sexually transmitted infection that if I find out that I have a sexually transmitted infection and I mention to the person I am seeing at the time that I'm cared for, they will give me a dose of medicine to take home to my male partner, my female partner, depending on who you have sex with. It's the exact same medicine that you would have received, and they take the medicine. And I think we should mention that anytime you do take medicine for a sexually transmitted infection, please eat something before you take the medication so that your stomach is not overly irritated and you throw up the medicine. But expedited partner therapy is something that maybe they will ask if you have a partner and you need medicine for the partner. If they don't ask, please ask them, hey, by the way, I do have a partner. I don't want that person to get the infection. Can you give me the medicine for that partner? And that can be done.
So in the case of syphilis, if I go in, I'm tested, it turns out I'm positive, and they need to give me an antibiotic. So I go back into the clinic to get the antibiotic, and I say, hey, well, I also have my girlfriend, and we don't use a condom. So then the provider will say, here's an extra package of antibiotic medication. Give this to your girlfriend so that she doesn't also have to make an appointment and come in and be seen. She can just take it at home. Is that what?
Let's clarify. Expedited partner therapy is for strictly chlamydia, gonorrhea, and sometimes another infection that we probably won't talk about much today, and trichomonas. It is not expedited partner therapy for HIV. It's not expedited partner therapy for syphilis. A person who has syphilis or HIV, there is going to be much more detail about any and all of their partners in a certain amount of time, so that those clients or those partners of the person that we know is infected with syphilis or HIV can get in for proper testing and their own treatment. So again, expedited partner therapy is only when there's chlamydia, gonorrhea, and sometimes with trichomonas.
Okay, thanks. But it does work that the second person won't have to come in to be seen.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and that's not just in YK. That is a nationwide opportunity. You could be in Oklahoma and they would offer that for you.
And I think ideally people that are contacts to sexually transmitted infections should be tested and treated themselves.
Yes.
But we do know there's instances for a variety of reasons that partners are people are unwilling to go into a clinic or to see a healthcare provider to get tested and treated. And so in the interest of public health and the health of our communities, that is what expedited partner therapy is for. But I think people should be encouraged to get tested because they're only getting treated then for one infection. And they're, like we mentioned before, these infections mm-hmm. travel together, so it's possible for them to have something else. And it is another tool, but I think ideally that they do get tested and treated themselves.
Okay.
They
should be seen and then be able to be tested for everything and then check on anything else that might be going on.
I think that is the best for their individual health, for them to have their visit with a healthcare provider to address all their needs and to get tested for everything so they're well taken care of.
And it is rare, Donna, but it actually can happen that, say, I would be talking to someone and they are positive for chlamydia, and I recommend that their partner get testing with a pee test, or if it's a female, they can do a vaginal swab if that's available to that female, and that person might come up with a different infection. So the one person might be positive for chlamydia, and you recommend that their partner get treated and test or get testing, and then they come up with gonorrhea. Well, that might not have shown up in that other person's test. That is rare, but that is the opportunity, is that you want to offer testing for anyone that might be a partner of someone that has a sexually transmitted infection.
And the other thing we haven't mentioned yet is what's called extragenital testing, and maybe we're getting there, but it's
yeah, important. We will.
Okay,
yeah,
I won't go
we're
going
to get there. okay, so expedited partner therapy, where you can take antibiotics home if you've got it, and you can take them home to your partner, is only for three diseases: trichomonas, chlamydia, gonorrhea. So we're going to move on to chlamydia and gonorrhea. These usually, when we talk about them as healthcare providers, usually go together. CTGC.
Hey, Donna, I'm going to interrupt really quick,
yeah.
Sorry, because I do want people to understand that expedited partner therapy is always going to be pill form, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you can't send a shot home with someone, but it's very important that if someone is diagnosed with gonorrhea and they have a partner, that they need to discuss the type of sex that they're having, because if someone is receiving oral sex, meaning they give oral sex to a female, or they give oral sex to a male, or if they are receiving anal sex, then pill form will not treat the sites in your throat, and it will not treat the sites in your anus. And so you do absolutely need to be properly treated with a shot and the pills. So, yes, we can give expedited partner therapy for gonorrhea, which is pills only. But if someone is engaging in having oral sex or anal sex, then they may not be properly treated. So we want to give someone the proper treatment.
Okay.
Okay.
No, thank you. we're going to keep talking about we'll get to the testing sites. But I just want to make sure folks know, I guess, what these two are. So the full name for chlamydia is chlamydia trachomatis, CT is what we refer to it as in the hospital or in the clinic. It's the most common reportable infectious disease in the United States. And here in Alaska, we have the number one highest infection rate for chlamydia in the nation. So what does that mean? What is chlamydia? What are some of the symptoms?
Chlamydia is a bacterial infection. Most often people have no symptoms, so it's what we call asymptomatic, no symptoms. When they do have symptoms, men are more likely to have symptoms than women, just the way our bodies are built differently.
Mm-hmm.
And men may have a discharge from the penis, like a clear discharge or a white discharge. They may have some burning when they go to the bathroom, or they may have no symptoms at all. Women, if they do have symptoms, may have a little bit of a change in their discharge. You know, women normally have a discharge that changes throughout their monthly cycle. But if they notice a change in color or odor, that could be signs of an infection. They may notice some bleeding between periods or some bleeding after sex.
Mm-hmm.
If the infection moves up further and becomes a more complicated infection, they can get what's called pelvic inflammatory disease. And that's a more serious infection and usually requires a longer course of treatment. And they can have abdominal pain when they have sex. They may have a fever. And that requires a visit to a healthcare provider and then more treatment, more medication to treat that infection.
But I think the key is what Lisa said. Most people with chlamydia do not have symptoms. And so, interestingly, when we might talk to someone on the phone who's listed as or in person and they're coming in because they are a contact of someone with chlamydia, they say they feel normal, they don't have any burning or tingling or pain with pee, that their scrotum, their balls, whatever you want to describe that part of your male body, has no tingling, tightness, feels totally normal. They have no wetness, no discharge, nothing coming out of the tip of their penis. They don't see anything in their underwear. And it could be the same for a female as well. They feel normal, but yet they can be walking around with chlamydia or a sexually transmitted infection for months or years. And unless they're tested, they would not know.
So we should be advocating for people to get regular testing all the time, even if you have the same partner for years and years. Every so often, how many times a year should people go get checked?
You know, if people know that they're in a monogamous relationship and they are absolutely certain that their partner does not have any other partners, then and they've both been tested, then they do not need to be tested. But really, the only people we can be sure of are ourselves. And sometimes people do things that they regret, or sometimes people do things under the influence of drugs or alcohol where they may not know if something happened, if they had sex. So people should get tested after events like that. I think every year for someone who doesn't have multiple partners, and then if they are having sex with more than one person or changing partners frequently, every 3 to 6 months is reasonable. Claire?
And just to clarify, monogamous, big word, meaning that you have sex with the same person. So that's man having sex with a man, woman having sex with a man having sex with the same woman. So monogamous just means that you're in a committed relationship. But as Lisa said, there's incidents in our lives that we might do something or something happens that we aren't even aware of because we're under the influence of a substance, whether that's alcohol. Doesn't mean you're an alcoholic, but if there's a binge alcohol episode and you're kind of fuzzy about maybe what happened, or you blacked out, or you might wake up with a sore anus, or you wake up with a sore vagina, something doesn't feel right, or you just want to make sure, please consider getting testing about 2 weeks after the incident. And the reason for that is because the infection can take anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks to show up positive in the urine or the vaginal swab. So if you get drunk on a Saturday night, you're not going to necessarily go see your health aide on Monday morning or go see your provider at YK or here in Anchorage on Monday morning. Put a reminder in your phone or write it down on your calendar. Get testing in 2 weeks and do the testing after that time.
Thanks, Claire. We don't always know what happens sometimes, and we just want to be able to prevent anything from getting worse.
Right.
So chlamydia is a bacterial infection. We don't, in men and women, oftentimes we do not have symptoms, so we don't know that we have it, and we're carrying it and potentially spreading it to others. In 2017, so just last year, the total reported cases of chlamydia in Alaska were almost 6,000, and we're a state of 700,000 people. So that's a good chunk of people that that got tested and found out they have chlamydia. There might be higher numbers because of the people that didn't get tested. And about half of those cases, so almost 3,000 people, were people who identify as American Indian or Alaska Native. So chlamydia infection is disproportionately affecting the Alaska Native community here in Alaska. Claire, specifically YK, how is YK dealing with high rates of chlamydia out here?
Well, Donna, because you work for public health nursing in Bethel, you're very familiar with this, but In August of 2016, the state of Alaska, for financial reason and for lack of personnel because of cutbacks in the state budget, they stopped doing sexually transmitted infection testing and follow-up care and notification to partners of someone that has an infection. And so now what is requested is that if you're told you have chlamydia, you're supposed to call your any and all partners that you may have been with in the last 3 or longer months and say, hey, I have chlamydia. You need to go get treated and tested. Let's be realistic. That's probably not really happening. At YK, we do try and notify any contacts of anyone that is given to us. That is strictly confidential. So if I call a person and say, you're listed as a contact, and they say, who gave me your name, they cannot and will not be given any information. We just basically let them know that someone cared enough about their health and they have had sex with them and they need to be tested and treated. So we talked about the public health cutbacks as far as what is available. Right now, because of the gonorrhea and the syphilis outbreak in the state of Alaska, our Department of Epidemiology, or people that do follow-up for sexually transmitted infections for the state of Alaska, they don't do any type of contacting for someone that has chlamydia. So we are committed at YK to have the healthiest people of our region, and so we do try and follow through and offer testing and treatment at that time to someone whose name is given to us as a contact.
Thanks, Claire. Yeah, it's unfortunate that there have been budget cuts to public health because it's extremely important, since these infections all run together, that we follow up on all these folks and make sure that everyone's getting treatment, or at least information, so they can access treatment on their own and make the best decision possible. And so how do we treat chlamydia? It's a bacteria, so we're going to treat it with an antibiotic, but what is it, and what are some of the health consequences to men and women if we don't treat chlamydia, because they might not know and they just don't get treated?
Well, first of all, the treatment for chlamydia is typically and always a one-time medication. If there are certain circumstances that someone has an allergy, or in a rural health village, the medicine might not be available, which is very rare, there is a week-long medicine. But we always try and go for the one-time medicine that, again, to remind a person that if you're taking medicine for a sexually transmitted infection, please eat something before you take it so you don't vomit up the medicine. When you are asked to not have sex for 7 days after you take the medicine, medicine and your partner also is asked the same thing, that's really serious, because if you try and have sex and you put a condom on, well, what happens if the condom breaks? Then both people are reinfected. So I don't know of anyone that has died of not having sex for a week, in all fairness. So please do abide by what is recommended, and that means no sex. You can have sex alone. Masturbation, whatever you want to call it, is totally fine because you're not involving another person. But the medicine needs 7 days to get rid of the infection out of your throat, out of your vagina, out of your penis, out of your scrotum, out of your anus, anywhere that you're having sexual contact, and it's the same for your partner. So if you get treated on Wednesday and your partner does not get treated till Friday, then you count those 7 days from after the last person was treated. So that's why we always try and treat people at the same time.
Just a quick question. If you're looking at someone's genitalia and they don't have any lesions or sores or anything, could they still have an STI even if it looks normal?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Especially something like chlamydia or gonorrhea. I mean, and really any of them.
Okay.
Most don't have any symptoms at all. You can't tell by looking.
So then going over to gonorrhea real quick, if one of you wants to tackle, what is gonorrhea? And what are those signs and symptoms? I'm assuming they might be similar to chlamydia, and how is that spread through sexual contact again. But what is gonorrhea and what are some signs and symptoms?
Again, it's going to be a bacterial infection that sometimes you will see symptoms with that someone's going to present to their health aide or to the provider in the emergency room and say, I have a discharge from my penis. It hurts when I pee, or it doesn't feel normal when I pee. For a female, she might have vaginal discharge. She might not. She might have irregular bleeding, or her period, as she knows it, is different. Whether or not she's on a birth control or not, her bleeding cycle is different. She might bleed after sex because there's an infection there, and so it's irritated during sex. So again, it might not have any symptoms for a man or a woman.
Okay. This is another one, another infection that Alaska leads the nation in rates of infection. And in 2009 and to 2011, there is a report that came out. YK region had the highest rates of infection of gonorrhea in the entire state. So not only was Alaska top three, but the YK Delta region specifically for a few years had the highest numbers in all of Alaska. But thanks to the expedited partner therapy and the team led by Dr. Compton, the rates of gonorrhea infection are now lower than they have been. But I know we mentioned this earlier. Now they're kind of going back up. So both chlamydia and gonorrhea run together a lot of the time, and gonorrhea rates are going up. Claire, did you want to touch on the outbreak that we're having of gonorrhea?
Well, and I think, you know, for the sake of time.
Yeah.
That, yes, we have higher numbers in the southwest of Alaska or the YK region. And I think one of the questions that we didn't jump onto, what is the outcome of chlamydia and gonorrhea? And I think that's something we should discuss really quickly. Chlamydia and gonorrhea are both curable. They are both typically a one-time medicine, but you have to be tested to find out if you have it. If you have chlamydia or gonorrhea and you don't know it, it can be doing permanent damage to a man's body or to a woman's body that a person would be infertile, which means a big word for you can't get pregnant because the infection has scarred your tube. It doesn't allow the sperm to get to the egg. Or for a man, he won't be able to have sperm come out. He still will come inside a person, but there won't be sperm that comes out. And so a man can be infertile as well. It also, in a woman, can lead to pelvic inflammatory disease, or PID, that Lisa touched on. And that's a much more severe infection because it's gone up higher in their female organs. For a man, he might present to his health aide or to the emergency room because his scrotum or testicles, whatever you want to describe that area, is swollen or tender, or it feels tight, it just doesn't feel right. But there can be permanent damage that is, you know, lifelong. And so that's what we wanted to mention.
No, thank you, Claire. That's really important that these are very curable diseases. They have, you know, one-time dosing for some of them, and or a shot. And you can get medication for your partner because the consequences are lifelong, and they can be infertility. meaning that you cannot have children in the future for both men and women. Right. And so lastly, so in the past, and we've recently changed our testing procedures. We talked about, you know, you can have sex in different places. You can have oral sex, you can have sex in the vagina and penis, or penis and anus. And so there's three different places in the body that we see these infections, especially chlamydia and gonorrhea. And so there's some new testing procedures. Before, you would just have to pee in a cup, you know, and you can still do that, but we've got some new ways to test where chlamydia and gonorrhea are. Can you ladies talk about that?
Yeah, just by testing, by peeing in a cup, you're really only testing the genital site. So if someone has engages in oral sex or anal sex, they can have those infections in the throat or in the anus and not have it in the genitals. So a urine test is not giving you any information, you know, if they're just using their throat and their rectum for sex. And they've done research studies on men who have sex with men, and they've compared the urine test to throat and rectal test results. And many infections are missed when only urine tests are offered to men who have sex with men. But women also use these body parts for sex. And so really, depending on where someone puts their body with other people and what parts they use, they need to be tested. It's a simple throat swab. The vaginal swabs, women can usually collect themselves. They can go into the bathroom and collect it themselves. And the people can collect rectal swabs themselves at the same time in private. And so they're easy tests to collect.
So just to add to that as well, Donna, is that if you specifically are being told that you're at risk for an infection and you're going to get testing, or you're having symptoms or you're not having symptoms and you want to get testing, please do not pee or don't urinate for at least 1 to 2 hours before you're going to get testing, because if you pee at your house at 11 o'clock and then you go see your health aide at 11:15 or 11:30, and yes, you can pee a little bit more, you're not going to have as good of a collection, okay? So if you're doing a urine collection, you want to be properly tested, so please make sure that you don't pee for 1 to 2 hours before that. If you're able to do a vaginal swab for a woman, that's something that they can explain to you how to do, and that's not affected by when you went to the bathroom. And one thing that Lisa mentioned, and we'll just mention it again, if you go to www.iwantthekit.org, IWANTTHEKIT, IWantTheKit.org. That currently is a free test. It's sent to you in the mail free. The results are called to you within a week of them receiving it, depending on our mail system. And as of January, the coming January, it will test that you can do a self-anal swab, you can do a self-vaginal swab, and now you can do a self-oral swab.
And a penile swab.
And a penile swab. So we have lots of wonderful options for free in the state of Alaska, www.iwantthekit.org.
And you can request that test on that website. It'll ask for your name and your address, and it's mailed to you in a blank envelope. It doesn't say any STD testing. It doesn't identify anything about STDs at all. It's a plain, blank, half-size manila envelope that should fit in a P.O. box.
Now, you do need an email address. You can't call an 800 number and order it. It has to be ordered through an email account, so that is one drawback. But we wanted to definitely put that out there.
No, thank you. There's tons of resources that we have here in Bethel and online in Alaska, and it's wonderful because we know we have issues with travel. We have issues with even sometimes getting mail, but just getting these things out to rural areas where sometimes it's harder to access healthcare, and maybe sometimes people might have issues with privacy. This is a very private way of doing that.
And so, as you know, there's sometimes we don't have a health aide in certain villages in the YK Delta. So that's an option that we have for people.
Thanks, Claire. And again, here in Bethel, you can go to YK, Bethel Family Clinic, or Bethel Public Health Center to get any of these things as well, any of these tests done. So I guess we've just got a few minutes left. I don't know if you wanted to touch on any of the hopes you might have for how we can help reduce STIs in our region, or some of the, you know, through the years that you've worked out here and you've seen the trends, what are some of the most effective ways of getting these numbers down?
I think one of the biggest things is reducing stigma, the stigmatization around sexually transmitted infections and HIV, and that's the stigma for testing, that people feel comfortable going in and asking to be tested, that providers are offering the testing and offering the testing to all, you know, in all sites, offering the throat swabs, the rectal swabs, the vaginal and penile swabs, and offering HIV testing. And also reducing the stigma around that some people still feel that they face once they are find out that they are HIV positive. And just reminding people that testing for this is confidential. It's your health information. It is protected information. Also just really increasing testing around those things. And increasing testing so that when people are diagnosed with these infections, they're diagnosed early on, whether that's chlamydia or gonorrhea, so they don't suffer the consequences of pelvic inflammatory disease or the more serious consequences, and also with HIV, that they're tested and diagnosed early in their infection so that they can live longer, healthier lives.
And adding to that, for the YK Delta specifically, we have 7 different school districts in the YK Delta, as far as my knowledge is. Every school district is different as far as their approach to sexually transmitted infection education. It takes a village to raise anybody. So please talk to your kids. Kids are having sex, whether you agree with it or not. Young people are having sex. Please know that the mandatory age of consensual sex is the age of 16. So in other words, if someone is having sex and they're under the age of 16, you should know who you are having sex with. And a healthcare provider, that is a health aide, that is myself, that is a teacher, someone that's in a position that would need to report something. It's not that we want to. If someone tells us they're agreeing to have sex, we have to report if someone is more than 3 years older than someone that's under the age of 16 and having sex. And there's that. That's there for a good reason, because unfortunately some people are in a situation of being sexually abused. Another thing I'd like to mention really briefly is something called pre-exposure prophylaxis. If you are someone that is at high risk to get HIV because you have multiple partners, or you do have sex with men, or you maybe have a problem of drinking heavily at different times. You're not an alcoholic, but you binge drink every once in a while. Please look into PrEP. You can Google that, and that stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. That does require a healthcare visit. You can't see your health aide, village health aide for that. But
and that is protection against
HIV
only. It doesn't protect against all sexually transmitted infections. But that's something that we just wanted to be sure to mention so that people were aware of it and could learn more.
No, thank you so much. Would you give some of your contact information for ANTHC and for YKHC STD program?
The contact information for early intervention services here is 907-729-2907, and that's our main number. We also have a website called iknowmine.org that has a lot of information about sexually transmitted infections, healthy relationships. It's great information for teens, also for parents.
And you send condoms? You can get condoms through the website?
I was about to say that. They can order condoms through the website and other information about sexually transmitted infections. They can also access the I Want the Kit website for the at-home STI testing.
Oh, Claire?
Other than re-clarifying that we all make mistakes. We all are human beings. If you are concerned that you may have had sex, you didn't mean to, you don't know if you used a condom or what exactly happened, please, please make a note or figure out a way to get testing about 2 weeks after that episode so that you find out as soon as possible for your health and for your loved one's health, your partner's health. And I think also during a pregnancy, no, you're not worried about getting pregnant because you're already pregnant, but if you have a new partner during your pregnancy, you also need to get repeated testing to make sure that the new partner and you have not exchanged a new sexually transmitted infection, because it involves the health of your child. If you have an infection such as chlamydia or gonorrhea during a pregnancy, it's very, very dangerous. It can put a woman at risk of having early labor. The baby can be born with severe eye problems leading to blindness. blindness or with lung problems if a baby is delivered through an infected vagina at the time of birth. So please do be open with your healthcare provider. If you don't want to say, hey, I might have had sex in a certain route, just say, I'm not really sure. Let's just test all routes. And that way you don't have to be embarrassed to ask. And you shouldn't be embarrassed. Sex is enjoyable. Sex is normal. Sex is happening between men, women, and men and men, and women and women. And it should be pleasurable. But I'm not going to say it should be safe, but it should always try and be with a condom. But in case the condom yes. breaks or it's not used, please, please go find out if you have something.
So use condoms. Get tested. You can get condoms at YK, Beth, at the high school clinic, at Bethel Family Clinic, and at Bethel Public Health Center. And Lisa and Claire, we're out of time. I really appreciate you spending time with us and giving us all of the information that you did. And thank you for your work.
Thank you, Donna.
Thank you very much, Donna, and to the radio station for having this really necessary conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Wellness Wednesdays on KYUK, a show about the health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m.